Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Bottom-Up Revolution. I'm your host, Tiffany Owens-Reed. I am a writer at Strong Towns, and I am honored to host The Bottom-Up Revolution. This is a show where we talk to ordinary people who are taking all kinds of steps, some of them big, some of them small, to advocate for their community, to try to help it become a more beautiful, more resilient, more safe place. Today, I'm joined by Armando Moritz Chapelican. He is a community organizer in Lehigh Valley. He has provided reports and educational materials on community and economic development for various organizations, including the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development, the U.S. Economic Development Administration, and the Local Initiative Support Corporation, where he currently works. He's also a dad, a volunteer in his local school district, and as we will discuss in this show, a grassroots community advocate. Armando, welcome to the Bottom Up Revolution.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking with you. To kick things off, let's kind of start with like setting the scene a little bit. Can you just create a snapshot for us? Where were you? What was going on when you realized it was time for you to do something about the Dixie Cup factory? We're going to talk a lot about this building today, and I'm excited for you to share what you've observed and what you're working on. But is there a particular moment that you think of as like the green light for you to take action?
Yeah, sure. So I first heard about the development actually when I was at a borough council meeting, because I had applied kind of on a whim when I'd seen that there was a vacancy on our borough planning commission. It was actually at that meeting where there was a vote on some sort of tax benefit or something for this site that was the Dixie Cup site. And I was like, well, what's going on with this? And so I started asking for more information. I didn't hear anything back. I reached out to the borough directly at a meeting, at a subsequent meeting, didn't hear anything back. A couple days later, I see on TV, the developer is talking to another government agency, basically saying like, we're going to build a warehouse. And I'm like, wait, why didn't anybody tell me this? And this is happening right around the corner from my house. And knowing that there was a borough vote that was going to be happening in like 3 days after this was airing on TV. And again, remembering this is right around the corner from my house and kind of where the building's located has a lot of neighborhood significance. Recognized there was a lot of urgency and that I needed to do something about it. So I very quickly dug up as much information as I could about the site in terms of what was being planned and what was being discussed, and made a plan to go start knocking on doors and talking to people about this, because it felt like something that more people needed to be talking about.
Let's tell our listeners a little bit about this building. So can you just orient us a little bit? What is the Dixie Cup Factory?
This particular building, it's like a 600,000 square foot building that's basically sandwiched in our neighborhood of Wilson Borough, which is between two larger cities in the Lehigh Valley. And the site was historically used for the development of Dixie Cups. And so like if you're driving by on one of the major highways, you can actually see a giant like water tower that's in the shape of a Dixie Cup that's painted that way. It's kind of been like a local landmark for a really long time since the building went up, I think in like the beginning of the 20th century. And so the site has basically been vacant since about, I think, 1983. So it's been a little over 40 years that this site has just either been underutilized or just left vacant, buildings falling apart, broken windows, a lot of deterioration happening around there. It just has really just been an eyesore for the community. And so given the fact that there's two schools located on either side of the building, and it's kind of very centrally located in our community, it really just has a huge amount of significance in terms of what's going to happen there for the surrounding neighborhood and arguably for the region.
So speaking of the region, can you tell us a little bit about your town? Just give us a little bit of context and yeah, maybe share what you really love about it.
Yeah, sure. So Wilson Borough is, like I said, this is a smaller borough sandwiched between two of the major cities in the Lehigh Valley. Our borough itself, our community, is roughly around like 8,000 people, but the Lehigh Valley as a whole has essentially seen a warehouse development boom over the past couple of years. So there's been warehouses popping up all over the region. And so it's kind of created this sense of hyper awareness of those kinds of developments happening in our region. And so given the fact that there has been kind of that pressure for warehouses coming up, once you say warehouse, oftentimes in a lot of community spaces, people's ears immediately turn on and they get a lot more concerned in terms of where is this going to be located? What is this going to mean for traffic? What's this going to mean for air quality? Because the region also has just been historically pretty agricultural. And so there's a lot of natural beauty here and a lot of also clean air that people want to preserve and enjoy both for themselves and for their families.
And just to place you even more specifically, Lehigh Valley is in Pennsylvania,
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we're in eastern Pennsylvania, about an hour north of Philadelphia.
Okay. So going back to the story, so you decided, you know, you needed to do something about this. As you mentioned, you originally heard about this while in the course of, you know, attempting or maybe that's not the right word, but you were at a meeting basically where it was going to be decided whether or not you would join your local planning commission, correct?
Yeah, I had actually already applied and I was at the meeting because they were voting on my nomination to be on the planning commission. So they actually voted me on. And so that was, yeah, that's kind of the reason why I was in the room in the first place. Yeah.
Okay. So you decided not to be on that commission and to take more of this grassroots tactical approach to advocating for better development for this site. Why did you make that change?
The short answer is that it felt very much like the borough just didn't want to listen. And as far as I could tell, the planning commission's role for the borough was to provide advice and support for the council to make decisions. And so, you know, right after the meeting, I had emailed the borough directly to be like, hey, can I get some information about this particular project and this tax benefit that's being voted on or that's being considered? And I didn't hear anything back. When I approached the borough solicitor at a following meeting, I think like a day later, he was like, oh, call the borough so they can give you my number. And then I reached out to the borough the next morning and the borough said, oh, he has your number. He'll call you back. And in the meantime, it's like, you know, I'm supposed to be not trying to throw around like titles, but it's like you all just literally voted for me to be on the planning commission. And this feels like something that's pretty significant for the community as a whole. And so when I started going around and asking questions about this, it just felt like nobody wanted to respond. And given the fact that this is such a tight time window between the Monday hearing about this, or the Monday being on the planning commission, being at the borough council, hearing about this tax benefit, the following week, approaching the solicitor, not getting any information, that Friday, then hearing that it's going to be a warehouse, and the following Monday was going to be when the vote was happening, there really wasn't a lot of time to be like, well, maybe cooler heads will prevail, because ultimately, the borough has to make a decision, and if nobody's going to ask any questions, and if people are going to ignore just me personally, then maybe I can get some other people in the community to ask questions so that we can finally get some answers.
Can you tell me a bit more about this whole like tax benefit? Like, what were they proposing? Like, what had been proposed by the developer? What were they getting ready to sign off on? I know that tax benefits is one of those phrases that can kind of get thrown around a lot, but I feel like oftentimes people don't know exactly what that means. So could you tell us what exactly was being proposed for this site?
Yes, it's very technical. And so I want to make sure I'm not getting all of it incorrect, but basically the basic version of it would be that there would be basically tax, the value of the site would be taxed at the current value as opposed to any of the improvements that would go in on the site. And so, you know, I mentioned broken windows and, you know, the building being in really a horrible state of repair. As the building would be repaired and as the building would get improved upon, the value of the property would go up. But the property owner wouldn't be taxed at that full value of those with those improvements. Basically, that would be phased in, I think, over like a 10-year period or something like that. And so essentially, that kind of tax benefit is the thing that this particular developer was looking for in order to make their development essentially like pencil out financially so they'd be mm-hmm. able to turn some kind of profit on this development.
So I think some people might hear that and say like, oh, wow, this is great. This has been sitting here for 40 years. It's an eyesore. Someone wants to do something with it. This sounds like a good deal. What was going through your mind when you heard this? And what was it that really motivated you to say like, no, I think we can do something better?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a couple of things that came to mind. So one, as you mentioned in my introduction, like I do community and economic development work for a living. So I've had the pleasure and the privilege of getting to work in a lot of different communities across the country in my current role and learning about how you can do more inclusive and equitable economic development and community development. And so part of what I'm thinking about is like, where was the process that led to the community collectively deciding, hey, this is a good idea. We want this kind of project. I hadn't heard anything about this until I was at that meeting. And there's a whole back and forth that could happen if you were to ask the borough about how much notification went out to the community about this. But the reality is that I'm also thinking about this as a parent. I live around the corner from where this building is located. Like I said before, the building is located right between two high schools. And it's also down the road from an elementary school. And so when my kid gets older, like he's almost four now, he's going to be going to these schools. And so if there's going to be a warehouse there, you're talking increased truck traffic. You're talking reduced air quality. And just also, it's not really going to be very safe. So those were all things that are going through my head, particularly when I wasn't getting any answers, when I was just asking, like, what is actually happening with this site? And then hearing the developer on camera in front of a government agent or a government council saying, like, it's going to be a warehouse. I'm like, well, that's why nobody's getting back to me. That's why nobody's responding to me. That's why nobody's giving me any more context, because they basically just want to push something through because, yeah, it's like what you're saying. This is something we can do. It's been 40 years. It's about time something happens, which I agree, something should happen, but it also should be something that benefits the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm. All right. So take us back to the scene. So, You decide to really take this grassroots approach to hearing from the community and ultimately presenting an alternative option to your council. What was that like? What did that involve for you?
Yeah. So ultimately just started by going door to door. Like I said, as soon as I heard that the developer was going to be doing warehouse, I think that was like a Friday night. I just remember sitting kind of stunned with my wife, like talking about this as my kid was upstairs sleeping, thinking like, what are we going to do? We live right around the corner. What's this going to mean for him going to school? We just start kind of spiraling a little bit. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like I can do something about this. So I put together some materials. I start knocking on doors. I start telling people like, hey, did you hear about this thing that's happening? Borough Council's making a vote on this on Monday. I distinctly remember also this was It was the weekend of Mother's Day. And so I was telling my wife, I was like, so is it cool if I take like 2 hours out of Mother's Day to go knock on some doors and try to get people to come to this meeting? And she's like, yeah, of course. Like, this is super important. I'm stressed out about it too. So was going around talking to people, and not surprisingly, there was a lot of interest in seeing the site develop. I talked to people who had lived in the community for a couple of years. I was there talking with people who have lived in the community for their entire life or who had family who worked at the Dixie Cup factory, people who have a lot of fondness for the site. And there was a general consensus that it's like, yeah, we need to see something happen with the site. But once you mention, again, like I mentioned before, warehouse, people get worried, people get scared. And so it was like, wait a minute, why are they voting on that? That seems like a really bad idea. Why is this the first we're hearing about it? And I'm like, well, I just kind of heard about it because I was at a meeting on a whim because of this whole planning commission thing. But now I'm here because I want to make sure that the community actually has a chance to weigh in and get some answers, because I haven't been able to get any myself. And so that was an uplifting experience, getting to see how much interest there was on the site. And clearly there's an energy there that isn't being fully tapped into at this point in time, to make sure that we're actually pushing a vision for this site that's going to be in the best interest of everybody who lives around it.
So were you able to convince people to come out at that next meeting on Monday?
I think we got maybe like 5 or 6 people to come out. I mean, I don't even remember how many doors I actually knocked on. Again, it was Mother's Day, and so there were a lot of doors I knocked on that people weren't home. And even as I was going around, there were some people who were like, oh, where's that meeting happening? Or, oh, I work late. I'm not able to make that. And totally understandable. Like, I was also just kind of going around with the clipboard, taking down people's names and emails in case people wanted information, because I was at this point, like, just getting as much information as I could and communicating it out to folks to make sure that people didn't miss it if they didn't, see the evening news or whatever. But yeah, it was like a handful of people that were interested and came out to the meeting to learn more, to hear what was actually happening.
So then the next project you worked on was the survey, this community survey. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the survey came a little bit later, just because there was kind of like the borough's whole process with voting through the tax proposal or the tax benefit. And then it went to the county where we were able to successfully push back on that. But the survey basically came from a place of, from my past experiences, anytime a developer comes through or anytime even government officials who are supportive of a development say that they want a development and they're acknowledging opposition, they're like, well, what do you want? Like, you don't have a plan for the site. Like, what should we be doing instead? And given the fact that we were able to push back on that tax benefit for this particular case with this warehouse, it was like, okay, well, let's take a moment. Let's actually have some more time, not just, 2 hours on Mother's Day knocking on doors, to ask people, what do they want to see happen with this building? What do you want to see? And I looked at the zoning that's currently kind of lays out the allowable uses on that site to ask people. It's like, well, here's what the zoning says we could do. What do you want to see done? part of that was knocking on more doors, going around to local businesses, talking with people that I knew, seeing if people could hang up flyers, because the survey itself was all online. But really wanted to be intentional about actually asking people, not just in the borough, but also in the surrounding communities. Because like I said, Wilson Borough is a very small place, but it's connected to a lot of other communities and people come in and out of the borough all the time. And so this development isn't just going to make a difference for Wilson Borough. It's going to make a difference for the entire part of the Lehigh Valley that we live in. So we need to really cast a wide net in terms of getting feedback on what's going to be best for us.
So just to clarify, you all were able to get that tax benefit off the table, correct?
Yeah, I mean, the borough council voted it through, but there were a couple different stages of what needed to happen. So the borough council had voted it through, the school district had voted it through. It also needed to be voted on by the county, though. And so as soon as things started kind of going south with the borough, just based off of some of the pushback that I'd gotten from them, I had to kind of like look to see who were the other potential partners who would understand some of the concerns that I was raising. And so if the borough wasn't going to listen to me, if my borough elected officials weren't going to listen to me, then I should reach out to the county. And I started reaching out to them, telling them about issues that I was having locally and said, hey, this is going to be on your agenda soon, and you're going to have to vote on it, and you should consider a lot of these different factors. So that kind of became the next stage of the back and forth fight, essentially, over whether or not this site should be getting a tax benefit.
Okay. And then once that was off the table, the developer basically walked away.
The developer started disappearing pretty quickly, honestly. Once it got to the county, the county had a lot of questions for the developer, and he was there to hear those questions and said he would get back. But then the county kept asking questions, but the developer never came back to another meeting, never followed up with information as far as I could see. Basically, I didn't see the developer after their first appearance or maybe second appearance to the county council saying, like, this is the plan. The plan was just a really nice rendering where all the windows for the building were fixed and there were some planters and trees around the building. And it's like, great, well, what's it going to be? It's going to be a warehouse. And everybody in the council was not happy with that. The borough made their case also to the county saying, like, we need this. This is really important. This, you know, it's going to make the community a better place. But even there, it became very clear that they were eager to get a win. They were eager to get a deal. They were eager to see the site revitalized. And they were impressed by, like, there's 7,500 windows that are going to be fixed. And it's like, great. But what's happening inside past those windows? What's going to be in there? Is there going to be housing? Is there going to be commercial? Is there going to be office? Or is it going to be warehouse? Some folks probably still don't even want to acknowledge that it was going to be warehouse, but that's what they voted for. And so when the county pushed back on that and said that they wouldn't support that tax benefit, I was able to breathe a sigh of relief, but then it also very quickly became like, all right, we need to actually have a forward vision for this site, because I feel like people are often like, oh, well, if you're just going to oppose development and you don't really have a solution, so you're just, you know, you're anti any form of development. And again, I work in community development, so I'm very much in favor of it, but I want to make sure it's actually something that's going to be for the community.
So what stood out to you the most from your survey results once you finished that and put it all together?
I think what was most interesting was the fact, like I said before, there was a lot of interest in the site. And I think people have a lot of different kinds of like emotional attachment to the site. And even when I say this general framing of like, I want to see something for the community, everybody seems to be on board with that. Everybody wants to see actually something for the community. Someone might be like, oh, well, I just want there to be more jobs in the community, or I want there to be housing. Jobs or housing for the community. That was always like the general framing that I continued to find. And so while there was maybe some disagreement in terms of the different types of uses that would be best for that building, the thing that I always like to remind people of is like, it's a 600,000 square foot building. It's massive. And the uses are broad enough that you could do a bunch of different things. Like, you don't just have to do housing. You don't just have to do, you know, something that's oriented towards jobs or office or whatever. But at the same time, there were some particular uses that overwhelmingly there was some consensus on. So people wanted to see community facilities. That was actually the most popular use across all the options that we laid out. And there was a universally least favorite use in terms of like warehousing or distribution, which is exactly what we were just pushing back against a couple months prior.
So I looked at your report briefly, and it seemed one thing that stood out to me is it just seemed like there was a serious gap between what the council thought was good for the community and what the people actually wanted. What were your thoughts on that? Like when you saw that?
I mean, it was just, again, one of those things where I had to wonder why there was just like this massive disconnect. Again, like there were some folks who probably even today would be like, that plan that was shot down was not for warehouse, even though it's like, here's the developer on camera saying it's going to be warehouse. And they're like, no, but it wasn't really going to be warehouse. And it's like, just admit that you made a bad vote. I think that there was just kind of like this disconnect between the council wanting to make a deal, recognizing that there is this historic eyesore in the community. It's literally the backdrop of all the football games right next to, like, you have the building, like this dilapidated building in the backdrop of the football field. So anytime you take pictures of the football game, you have like this rusted over looking cup and like a broken up factory building with broken windows in the backdrop. Like, it's just, people want to see something done with it. But I think that in the eagerness to pursue a deal, the borough council really wasn't open to criticism or even frankly getting any questions. Like there were times where there were questions that were being asked or questions that I was raising, and they're like, well, it's not our job. It's not a responsibility to give you the answers that you're looking for. And it's like, actually, it is. And so given that, I think that it didn't surprise me that there was this very wide gap between kind of like what was being pushed and what community members actually wanted to see happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what were the results of this survey of your efforts in that area? Can you continue the story for us?
Yeah, sure. So the survey itself, I presented it to the county council, because again, I think that I learned through that previous back and forth and debate on the tax benefit, that the county council really had a lot of interest in seeing something happen with the site. They've put forward a lot of different tax benefits over the 40 years the site's been underutilized to no success. So I was like, well, here's a survey that I did. And you all know me because I was here during the whole debate on the tax benefit. And so a lot of members on county council seemed very encouraged and were like, hey, well, have you tried talking to this developer or to this developer, or talking to people who proposed things in the past? And always like to point this out, like this wasn't just like one political party or another. Like, folks from both parties were like, hey, well, I know somebody who had a plan 10 years ago or 15 years ago. You should talk to them. And unsurprisingly, maybe, it wasn't even a year since the previous developer kind of disappeared, that a new developer came out of the woodwork and was like, well, I have a plan for the building. And their plan was primarily residential. There's going to be some community uses and retail space associated with that as well, which again, kind of like neatly aligns with some of the priorities that we saw in our survey. And part of me likes to think that that's not a coincidence. Like, I know there were residential plans in the past, but the reality is that across the board, whether it was going to be like deeply affordable housing or you know, luxury housing, which is popping up in a lot of different places, people really want to have community amenities and community facilities that are for not just residents of the building, but for people in the community as well. And so there's a lot of remediation, I think, that's happening right now because the building wasn't, you know, a manufacturing site. So there's a lot of environmental remediation that needs to happen on the site before it's clear to do any residential stuff. But that's been encouraging. Like, that's been the past couple of months, that there's been a developer who hasn't been asking for any sort of tax benefit yet. Maybe they will in the future, but they've been showing up to the school board. They've been showing up to the borough. They've been offering like, here is our general plan initially. And they were open to feedback, and they got a lot of feedback, I think, last year, where the school board was like, well, I don't know if we like everything here. And the difference between that plan and what was proposed maybe, I think, a month or two ago was very different, and was, I think it shows that there's a back and forth conversation actually happening between the different community stakeholders and institutions and the developer, which definitely was not the case the last time around.
I feel like sometimes in the conversation about cities, developers are automatically seen as the bad guy to be wary of, which sometimes they are. But it seems like one thing that has just stood out to me from listening to you from our conversations is how your grassroots work really positioned your community to model this way that developers and residents can work together. Actually, there can be this like proactive, positive development experience. So I'm just curious, like, why would you say like, oh, we shouldn't automatically be afraid of developers? Just from your experience, can you speak to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the reasons why people might be afraid of developers is like, they might not know necessarily what are the things that they should be saying or the things that they should be asking for. And I think one of the things that a couple of different elected officials or key local stakeholders, even during like the tax benefit and even during the tax benefit fight, and then even more recently with this most recent developer, like the school district, the borough, the county, like recognizing that they actually have some leverage in terms of saying like, well, this is what we actually want for our community. Because I think that developers play a really important role in terms of helping to develop our communities. Like they have the expertise, they have the resources. And I think community just needs to be better generally about like asserting its voice. And sometimes we look to like our municipalities or our school districts or our counties or like our elected officials to do some of that. But other times, like it should just be community residents. One of the things that I found even just over the course of doing this work is that there's a lot of people who care about their community, not just in the context of like community development or resilience or walkability, but even just promoting pro-social behaviors for kids, like middle school kids and high school kids. And that frame in and of itself has a community development lens where it's like, well, if you want kids to feel attached to their community or to have pro-social behaviors, like they need to be able to walk around and feel safe. They have to be able to have places to go when they're not in school or at home. And that conversation inevitably leads to a community development angle. And so it brings you to having to think about like, well, who are developers who could develop some of these types of things, whether it's a community center, whether it's a space for kids to hang out, whether it's like, you know, a coffee shop or a juice bar, whatever type of thing, or sandwich shop for people to hang out. So all of these conversations are kind of linked together. And I think that when people recognize that, you know, community development and developers generally, like they're going to influence our lived environments, and they assert kind of like their role as part of the community, whether they're a tenant or a property owner or whatever, like that can be really powerful, particularly when they know when to make their voice heard, which I would say is like all the time. But there's particular moments where it's especially valuable that you're in those meetings, that you're talking with your elected officials, that you're asking some of these questions, because otherwise, some of these benefits, if I hadn't been at that meeting, like this might have just gotten through and I would have heard about it after the fact and it would have been too late.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful what you're talking about, kind of this vision you're casting of communities realizing they can have a serious, they can have a proactive role in shaping the developments that come to them. I think sometimes it feels like communities just feel like they have to take whatever they can get, kind of what you saw happening, right? It's like, unless we're, you know, unless you're some big shot, you know, city where everyone's competing to like for pieces of pie, I think a lot of smaller towns and cities kind of feel like, well, I guess if they want to build here, you know, who are we to say they shouldn't, right? But what your work and just what listening to you, it's like one thing that's becoming clear is it's like, no, you can have some agency here. And even if you're a small town, you can say like, this is who we are. These are our values. And this is what we're looking for. And really take that proactive position instead of just kind of being passive and thinking that you're not big enough to speak to be part of that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said before, I'm doing a little bit of volunteering with our local school district. And I mean, my son's a toddler, so he's not in any of the like public schools yet. But I've had a chance to meet a lot of the people who work at the schools who are just like, yeah, like what are we doing for kids outside of school? Which is also just like a really great perspective to have, particularly because it's like, oh, well, you could think that, oh, if you work at the schools, all you care about is the kids being in schools. But it's like, no, people care about how are folks going to feel connected to their communities outside of that, outside of those school hours. How are we making sure that, you know, kids are showing up to school? Well, if they're not showing up to school, why is that? Is it because they're missing the bus, or they don't have a way to get to school? Or are there other issues that we need to be thinking about? Like that holistic perspective, I think, is really important. And that whole conversation can very easily just be siloed within like an education context, which is, it's important, but it also is tremendously important to community development and economic development in terms of thinking about like, well, what are the buildings that are around our schools? What are the, how walkable is our community to make sure that kids can get to school on foot if they live around the corner? Do kids feel safe crossing the street? Or is there going to be a ton of truck traffic that's coming through where it's not actually feasible for kids to do that? So I think that it's been uplifting to see people in these different historical like silos kind of coming together and starting to do the exciting work of visioning when it comes to community development. Because especially in like your smaller towns where there isn't so much built up, or there's abandoned properties like the Dixie Cup site, there's so much potential. And all you actually need is to get enough people to start coming together and start visioning around what that could actually look like to determine what we want to see in that site longer term.
Yeah. And I love the example you were giving of thinking about talking about schools as, you know, as a pathway to thinking about your community from this holistic perspective, right? Because I feel like so often you drive around some cities and you're just like, what were people thinking? Why is that building next to that building next to that building? You know, it's like, I feel like so many places kind of lack that coherence of where through their architecture and their development decisions, they're communicating like the pattern of life that they're seeking to cultivate. And I think that's one way of looking at development of like, let's think of our city as a coherent whole, as like a fabric, right? That, or one of my favorite quotes by Jane Jacobs is like a container for human life, right? Okay, well, what do we want life to be like in our container? And then kind of using that to shape your vision, shape your values, and work from there to find the development that aligns with that. I think that's a truly positive and empowering way to think about development rather than just thinking about it. I feel like more of this transactional way, you know, well, it's like, well, who's going to, you know, just deals.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's all about the deal.
Yeah. I mean, I was in a conversation recently with someone, this isn't wearing my professional hat, but like we were talking about, you know, transactions themselves do not necessarily need to be transactional. Like you can do a real estate development deal, but that real estate development deal can result in something that's actually transformational for the community. And I think that's the thing that I'm encouraging folks that I'm working with and I'm meeting with and organizing with here in the community to do is like, let's be visionary. Let's be transformational. Let's think about what can we actually get done here? Let's not think about like, oh, well, this is the way that it's been and that's the way that it's always been. And so that's, you know, just kind of the way that it's going to always be. But let's actually think like, what do we actually want to see? And I mean, I keep mentioning my son as a toddler, but like, in a lot of ways, I'm playing the long game here. Like, I don't expect this building to be up in like 2 or 3 years, or even in like, you know, 5 years. Like, I've heard varying different accounts of like how much work it's going to take to redevelop this site. But what I'm hoping for is that he can have a place when he's a teenager where he can hang out with his friends. Where, you know, I'm gonna be wondering like, oh, he's after school, he's going to hang out with friends at this place over here. Like that, there's going to be these spaces that aren't going to be essentially like pushing. High school kids or like middle school kids out of wherever they're hanging out with their friends, because that's one of the impressions that I've been getting when I'm in a lot of these different spaces and through some of the woke work that I'm doing with some other groups. Like, I've had a chance to talk with high school students and they're literally saying things like, I just want to go someplace to hang out with my friends where I don't have to spend money. And I'm like, yeah, that would be nice. And we have a park, but also if it's winter or it's raining, what are you going to do? Like, there needs to be this, there needs to be a broader conversation around this. And I think what I've been finding really encouraging about this particular site and then others when I'm talking with other folks in the community is just like, you don't have to have a degree or any sort of like advanced training to do any of this. You just need to have the willingness to learn some of the language so that you can at least be somewhat conversational when you're talking with government officials or with developers to prioritize what you really want. And I think that especially applies when I'm talking with like high school kids. It's like, you don't have to be a government official or a grown up or a parent to do this. Like, there's so many times where you have these public decision-making spaces where people are like, well, what do, like, oh, we're going to talk about the kids. And it's like, well, but the kids have an opinion. Like, we're not talking like just 5-year-olds and 3-year-olds and, you know, infants. Like, we're talking about teenagers. We're talking about kids who, you know, are going to be going to college soon. Like, what are the resources that we're providing for them here in their community so that they feel some level of attachment to that place? And they can be a part of those conversations now. Like, just because they're not old enough to vote doesn't mean they can't help to inform developments in their community.
Yeah, of course. The other thing I want to point out about your story is coming back to the developer side. It seems like something you did with this survey is that you positioned both your community to take this proactive stance and really articulate what a positive vision for the site. But you also solved a serious problem for developers, because I feel like through that survey, you were able to offer some transparency into the community and what they value and what they're actually looking for. And I feel like from what I've heard about like how a lot of development conversations can go, and I think you hinted at this earlier, so often there's like hostility or like breakdown because of the lack of that transparency, because the community is just constantly reacting to what someone has given them. Right. And so I think that's, this is like a win-win, you know, it's like, you're not going to scare off a developer just because you're clear about what you actually want. I think that actually works in their favor, right? Because it's really reducing the amount of information gathering they have to do and the ambiguity. And I think honestly, just speeding up the process for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, in all fairness, like everything around the tax benefit and pushing back against it, like that was entirely a reactionary campaign. Like, yes. And it very quickly became clear that it was like, we don't want this tax benefit, because the developer had literally said at points, if I don't get this tax benefit, I'm going to walk. And like, he wasn't looking like he was going to get the tax benefit, and he had already disappeared. And then the tax benefit didn't go through. We never heard from him again. But once that was done, it's like, okay, let's take a breath and let's actually be proactive rather than just, you know, reacting to plans that come along. Let's say what our priorities actually are. Because we aren't operating now on the timeline of a tax benefit or a particular deal, we have the time to think about this, to reflect on it, to argue about it, to not necessarily come to a single vision of like, we want this building to be 50% this and 50% this, and there's going to be 10 trees around the building, and here are the plans. Like, we have the time to get as specific as we want to. And part of that is also just an organizing exercise for people to recognize that they have some level of agency. Because then, yeah, a developer can come along and say like, well, I want to do something with this building. And anybody who had a copy of the report can be like, well, here's what some people have wanted to do. Did it capture everybody in the community? No, of course not. I'm doing this all kind of like on my own. And I'm also just basing it off of the people who filled it out, assuming they all filled it out accurately. But the reality is that there's a starting point for the conversation, because so often I think people will say like, well, this is what the community wants and this is what the community doesn't want. But here you actually have numbers to back that up, and you have a hierarchy of uses that people do like and don't like. And even if it's just a small snapshot of the overarching region, it's very clear people want community facilities. They don't want to see warehouses. And just from that level of orientation, you can start to kind of like sort through the entire universe of developers who might be interested in a project like this.
Yeah, truly empowering for everybody involved. Armando, it'll be really fascinating to see kind of how this story continues to unfold. And I'm sure it's going to be just really exciting for you to watch and to listen in on these conversations. To close today, we get to close with more of a fun question. If someone was coming to your town for a couple hours or for a day, what local spots would you recommend they check out for a slice of local life?
Yeah. So like I mentioned before, Wilsonboro is kind of sandwiched between these two major cities. The closer one to us is the city of Easton, and we have a really awesome public market. They have a dedicated play space for kids. So my son loves being there, and they have a bunch of different vendors and businesses that are in that space. And so I love spending a lot of time there, whether it's after picking him up from daycare. On the weekends, we go over there for lunch and walk around the center square. So like that whole downtown area is just really gives a very community-oriented vibe. And there's more than a couple of times where I've run into like other parents from daycare, and we end up like making an afternoon out of like hanging out together because we're in that space. And I'd probably be remiss if I didn't point out that like I think that the public market was like ranked the number one public market by USA Today or something. So they have stickers all around the entrances so people know.
Serious brag cred right there.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be bragging about them if I didn't like spend all my money there when it comes to like dinner or lunch on the weekends, because they have really good food that both I and my family as a whole really appreciate and enjoy. So would definitely recommend the Easton Public Market.
Any other places? Do you have like a favorite coffee shop, favorite pub, favorite green space?
My favorite coffee shop is actually a place that my wife actually dressed up as like the personification of the coffee shop, and it's called Plants and Coffee. So she had like a coffee mug on her head, and then like some of the plants, because they sell like stuffed plant animal things, or like plant plushies that my son likes. So like she wore a bunch of plant plushies. But this place, Plants and Coffee, is probably my favorite coffee shop. And it's also located, it's like the West Ward. So it's like right next to Wilsonboro. It's like right between Wilsonboro and Easton. So I always like to stop in there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Armando, for coming onto the show. It was really great hearing your story. Thanks to our listeners for listening. I will be back in 2 weeks with another episode. If there's someone you would like to see on the show, someone you think we should consider interviewing, please fill out our suggested guest form. The link to that will be in the show notes. We'll be back in 2 weeks.